Hello, and welcome to Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. We are up to episode 24, and as always, I am Michael M. Patty.
And I am Robert Wright Stasko.
Today, we will be discussing one of our favorite movies, Contact, starring Jodie Foster, James Woods, Matthew McConaughey, Rob Lowe in a small part, David Morse, a whole bunch of people, directed by Robert Zemeckis, a master craftsman responsible for Roger Rabbit, Back to the Future, and most recently Flight.
Yes, he did all those mocap anime films like Beowulf and Polar Express.
Those were all just okay.
Yeah, it was nice to see him get back to, I would say, a more grown-up medium.
Yeah, and did I mention Forrest Gump? I think I said Back to the Future. And
yes, Forrest Gump.
Yeah.
That one nabbed him the Academy Award. Yeah, I watched it, and I thought it was the best movie I saw in 1998, and then I saw something else. And I got over Forrest Gump.
Oh, I still like Forrest Gump.
Yeah. That one, it's very interesting. I bring that up every time we have one of those debates about Calvinism or Arminianism. Basically, it's predestination or free will. I bring in Gumpism. I think it's both at the same time. You know, the whole metaphor with the feather blowing on the wind and all that.
Okay.
So, yes, I bring that up and how Forrest Gump has resolved a 200-year-old conflict within the church.
As he has done so many other things in his brief and imaginary life. Okay.
But anyway, Contact.
And in TV Corner?
TV Corner, we are finally doing the show that we've alluded to and made fun of and disparaged so many times.
We've only mentioned the program in, I think, the last six or seven shows we've done, and always in a negative light.
So we've bit the bullet and decided to give it a fair shake.
It's a great companion piece to Contact.
Yes.
Ancient aliens.
So we're very excited.
Yes, I'm loaded up on double mocha coffee, and we're going to have fun, folks. Buckle in.
All right. So, Contact. This movie I saw when it first came out, and I think I may have seen it on videotape right afterwards, but I haven't watched it in quite a while. 1997. This came out like the summer after I got married. So this is like when me and Corinne were like, my wife were watching like a movie every week. We come home from work on a Friday, go out and see whatever new movie came out. So this was one of those, and we really liked it at the time. And I remember having mixed feelings about the content and the message of the movie. I didn't quite know what to think. But seeing it again and having been through several years of religious schooling, I understand some of the things that are going on a little more, and I really like it that much more because of it. So,
should we give a little background?
Sure, go for it.
Okay. Contact was originally a novel written by an astronomer, and I don't know if he was an atheist or an agnostic. He was not a believer. Carl Sagan. Since he was an astronomer, he decided to take his hard science knowledge and write a what-if-we-make-first-contact novel. The main character is also a non-believer, and she's an astronomer. She listens for signals from extraterrestrials. She's a part of SETI, the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence.
This is Jodie Foster's character,
yes,
right?
Okay. And eventually she hears it, discovers it, and the story is all about the political and scientific, religious, ethical responses to that message. And what happens in the book is they figure out that the message is actually instructions for a teleportation machine. And long story short, they do make first contact, but there's no evidence of it. And she has to take it on faith what really happened to her.
Right. And I like that balance, that we lived in such a modern era where it has to be everything empirically proven. I like the part where they're at a dinner party, I think. Jodie Foster's character is chatting up Matthew McConaughey's character. They're reconnecting after years and a brief fling that they had. And they're kind of having this light banter about faith and what it means. And she's like, well, I need everything empirically proven and everything. And she's kind of joking around, maybe thinking, oh, maybe we'll hook up again after the party, you know, that sort of thing, that sort of light banter you have. And he turns it around on her, not physically, but metaphorically punches her in the face with a question. He's like, well, did you love your father? She's like, well, yeah. And he's like, prove it.
Her father had passed away when she was 9.
Yeah, and he was really the one who inspired her to and supported her and her science and astronomy and amateur ham radio and
yeah,
all these things that made her who she is. And Matthew McConaughey is basically saying, you know, well, prove that. This is who you are. All these things. It's based on the love of your father. Prove it to me. And she couldn't. And
yeah.
That's a foreshadowing of the journey to come for her. So.
Yes. Interesting side note. It's been a long time since I read the book, but I do remember that Palmer Joss's character, the one that Matthew McConaughey plays, completely reinvented from the way it is in the novel. In the novel, he was more like a he's more like a tent revival preacher.
A holy roller.
Kind of, yeah. I think, have you read it? I think he might be described as that in the book. It's been a long
time. I have not read the book. I've not read Carl Sagan's book.
But they kind of reinterpreted the character to give him more screen time with Jodie Foster, and I think it was for the better. I think it makes the story better.
Yeah, because that's more conservative, fundamental kind of thing. And they made him more of a liberal Christian, close to where my views are. Because watching the movie just a few weeks ago, I found myself really paying attention to the things that Matthew McConaughey's character was saying and was like, oh, yeah, that's what I... And so I could see the more of the conflict that was going on there and really understanding like the resolution to it and how they came to that resolution, or if you can call it that, at the end.
Yeah.
Basically, the message I got from this movie was that even in this age of science, you know, if you put all your faith in science, it's still a faith. Was Carl Sagan still alive when this movie came out?
I think he passed away while it was in production.
Okay. I think that's what Carl Sagan was trying to say. And you read the book. Did you get that message from the book that faith in science is still faith in something? That we can't just live looking at the facts and, you know, going sort of through the motions of our life, not really having faith in everything, just looking for facts and truth.
I'm sure I didn't at the time. I kind of seem to recall that it was definitely anti-religious.
Oh, okay.
When I read it, I could be mistaken. Like I said, it was a long time ago, and I'd have to read it again.
Yeah.
With fresh adult, not in college eyes.
Yeah.
But I, knowing his background and having read Cosmos before that, I think I took away from it the whole, this is what really would happen on Earth, the whole secular, humanistic approach. That said, I think the movie, like Robert has stated, is more... It very least strives for more balance between all of the viewpoints, and I think it does so masterfully. It gives a view of the people camping out at the very large array in New Mexico?
Yeah.
Wherever it is.
Yeah.
It shows people camping out there and all the alien fanatics and the religious extremists led by Jake Busey,
yes.
who is crazy in a completely different way in this movie than usually.
Yeah. That kind of runs in the family, don't it?
A little bit. He plays a religious extremist who turns into a religious terrorist, eventually destroying the first machine because it's in opposition to God's word.
Yeah. See, that part, I think, you know, we've seen our fair share of religious extremism, like Baptist Church,
right,
and stuff. But
don't you think if the situation portrayed in Contact were real, don't you think someone like Jake Busey's character would at least try to take that kind of step? Maybe in this day of age, post 9/11, they'd have a little bit better security.
Right.
So maybe it would be at least thwarted. Don't you think somebody would try to stop contact with aliens?
Now that you put it that way, yeah, I think it would. I think it's my hope that Christians would move beyond that sort of
I would hope Christians would say,
you know, but it's, like I said, I'm tend to be more towards the liberal side, and
I would hope Christians would say, "Let's see what else God created,"
and that's my feel on it.
But that would mean the Bible is wrong.
It wouldn't mean the Bible is wrong. It just means the Bible isn't
complete.
Yeah, the Bible is God's revelation to us of Himself. Okay, now there's some things that we don't need to know. So God hasn't told us all about Him, you know, or all about the universe. Like people, we've had this conversation on our episode on Paul, which dealt with creationism, that, you know, people tend to look at the first couple chapters of Genesis like, you know, God's celestial cookbook, all right? And these are the ingredients He put in, and poof, you have a universe. You know, that's not it. It's a story. It's a metaphor. Dare I say a myth? But it tells us an important truth, not maybe all the facts, as I'm making little air quotes, the facts, but it tells us the truth of what happened, that God created the world, and He filled it with life, and He filled it with us. That's the sort of thing that I think we're losing sight of by trying to defend the Bible by saying it's all literally true, that you can test it empirically, and it comes out because that's not the way it was written. And if you're trying to put the scientific test to the Bible, which all your atheists have been doing over the past 100 years, it will fall apart because it's not designed to be a scientific document. It's great in many kinds of genres. You have poetry, you have song, you have parable, you have history, you have, you know, all these things. And you have to come to the Bible with a sort of delicate and intentional purpose of saying, okay, I'm going to read this part like it's a history, because I know this part is history, like the books of like Kings, those are histories. But then when you get to Psalms, you can't read that like a newspaper. You have to read it like you're reading poetry, because that's what it is. You know, if we take everything in the Bible literally, what happens when you get to Jesus' parables? Are those actual stories of things that actually happened to Him, and He's just telling you things that happened, and they have no metaphorical meaning at all? Or, because if you're gonna take the Bible literally, that's what you have to do. If you're gonna take every word as like the cold hard fact, and you're not gonna look at anything deeper than that, that's what you're gonna have to do. You can't pick and choose, and that's what I think fundamental conservatives try and do, is pick and choose, and they end up picking out and choosing the things that best suit your own agenda. Like characters like Jake Busey did, and you know, and then you go and blow up people's spaceships. So, and that's my rant for today against
stubbornness.
Yes,
I want to talk a little bit about the scene where Matthew McConaughey essentially stymies Jodie Foster's quest to go on the mission. By asking her straight out if she believes in God. And he has figured out that she doesn't believe the same things he does. And what happens in the movie is he's on a panel that gets to decide who the one person who gets to go in the machine is. And he sets her up for a fall by asking if she believes in God, knowing that she's not going to give a straight answer, and the commission is not going to back her because, in their words, they don't want somebody to represent all of humanity who doesn't believe the same thing as 90% of its people.
I think that number might be wrong.
I think
the especially in Western civilization and in America, and especially in Europe, belief in God is not a paramount priority for people. Christianity is exploding like in Asia, Africa, Indonesia, places like that, South America, but it's really dying in America, and it's like dead in Europe. Church attendance is down. Class I'm taking now is looking at these questions and saying, what do we need to do to change? And basically is, you know, we've, as Christians, have tried to control the message of Christ, control the gospel, and therefore reduced its effectiveness. This thing called reductionism. Some examples, when Constantine made it the religion of the empire, that sort of reduced the gospel.
Oh, wait.
Turned it into an institution.
Not Keanu Reeves?
No.
the Ray Kroc of religion.
Yeah. That's right. There's a church in every town, just like the Golden Arches, right? But that's the thing. It's, you know, we've kind of had this idea that, you know, if you build the church, people will come, like in Field of Dreams. But what we need to do is we need to go back to the way the gospel was originally communicated from Jesus to his apostles, from the apostles to other people. It's by building relationships. It's by extending the love of Christ, by, you know, developing it in yourself, not having another program or, you know, building a church and expecting people just to walk in.
And that doesn't mean going door to door either.
No, that's not it. It's building relationships. It's going to your next door neighbor and getting to know them, introduce them, have them over for dinner, and getting to know their family.
Maybe not my next door neighbors.
Maybe it should be. That's the thing. That's what, you know, we're supposed to do as Christians. But, well, you're off the hook, Mike. You're not a Christian, are you?
Not so much.
Not so much. Oh, I have a term for you, backslider. But, you know, it's these things that, you know, we should be doing that we're not doing that. And you know, you look at sort of the caricature of Christians in films like this, like Contact, and some people may be offended, but I'm like, well.
Which Christians are you talking about, Jake Busey or Matthew McConaughey?
Well, okay, like the Jake Busey character.
Oh.
I think McConaughey's character isn't so bad. But to get back to your original question, I'm sorry, I kind of went off on another tangent.
Quite all right.
To get back when he's setting up Jodie Foster's character by asking her, do you believe in God or not? I think there's something else going on there.
Oh, absolutely. He even admits that he's doing it to be petty because he doesn't really want her to go.
He doesn't want her to go because there's...
He's got the hubba hubbas for her.
Right. I didn't get that the first time I saw it. I got that this time. I was like, he did that. And you could look on his face. I mean, I was actually quite impressed with Matthew McConaughey's performance in this movie.
Yeah,
which you can't say about a lot of his stuff.
Yeah, no, he was not high for this movie.
Yeah, that's right. Or bare-chested. Well, a little bit.
A little bit.
But not the whole thing. He really did a good job. You could see it was paining him to ask her this. And he was struggling. Should I do this or not? Because he knew his own intentions weren't the best.
Yeah.
You know, and he wasn't doing this from an altruistic,
I'm doing
this to protect my friend. He's like, I don't want you to go because I'm never going to see you again.
Yeah, a little more backstory. In the movie, his character says that he had been to seminary school but dropped out because he couldn't handle the celibacy thing. I believe that's the same day he beds Jodie Foster's character.
Yeah.
And
somehow I missed that the first time. Maybe I went to get popcorn or something. But
I
don't remember that part. And I was like, well, why is their relationship so... I think I missed that scene the first time I saw it.
Yeah, that's...
Yeah, that is a very important part. So,
and it establishes
that tension that's between them the rest of the movie.
The fact that he has feelings for her, even though they are essentially opposites, is a big part of that scene. And it's not just because of his faith that he wants someone who believes in God to go. He doesn't want her to go.
Yeah. And so no matter what happens, no matter what we believe and what we think, we're all human. And we have our own desires and our own wants and our own agendas that are going through our minds and our hearts when, you know, And I think what's great about this movie is, you know, like you said, Mike, it really says, well, what if this would happen? How would we react? And the more I think about it, and sitting here talking with you, it really does a good job of running through the scenario. This is the kind of things that would happen. I mean, this movie's, what, 15 years old already? And it's still pretty relevant. I mean, it could still happen today.
Yeah, the,
we got the signal.
The cable news presence, the internet wasn't quite as prominent as I'm sure it existed in 1997, because I know I had email as early as 1995.
That was fun watching all those little computers going in. The guy's like,
yeah.
We still do that, but...
But it really, other than the huge monitors, it's not that dated, and I think it's still, at least the points and the process that things would go through, the emphasis on national security, the questions of religion, the public versus private funding of the machine, where industrialist S.R. Haddon comes
guy.
In. Yeah. You know who played... Haddon?
Oh, yes, John.
Okay. And do you know who played David Drumlin?
No.
Tom Skerritt.
Oh, yes, that's right.
Tom and Skerritt. They were both in some other movie about extraterrestrials. I don't remember what it was called. But yes.
Oh, that's... You know what? I forgot Skerritt was in that.
Yeah.
He gets eaten pretty early.
I think so. He might even... No, he's not the first.
Yeah, he's in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
I think he gets... They're in the... They're in the crawl space and the alien gets them, right?
Yeah. I need to see it again.
We
are talking, of course, about Alien, which has John Hurt and Tom Skerritt in it.
Yeah.
I remember thinking it was really cool that they were both in this movie back when it first came out, even.
I totally forgot about Tom Skerritt being an alien. That's cool.
Yeah. This whole movie's cool. Yeah. I love Contact. My wife thinks it's boring. I was able to watch it in... one sitting straight through without pausing it. I got up and camped out on the couch and watched my Blu-ray of it, and it was phenomenal. I highly recommend it. It should be cheap too. Go drop your $7.99 on the Blu-ray of Contact.
I watched it on Vudu. I watched it in standard definition, but it still looked really good. I got that Blu-ray that streams now, that Sony Blu-ray player.
Okay.
So I've been, you know, watching most of my TV and movies on streaming now, and it's another sign of the times, I guess. The changing face of film.
Yeah. Hey, but, my buddy at work set me up with his Hobbit ultraviolet code, which works on Vudu. So that's how my wife and I watched it at home.
It's great. Well, I got the whole shebang, Blu-ray, DVD, ultraviolet package of the Hobbit. So I like took turns watching each one just to get my money's worth.
So do you want to talk at all about the end of the movie where Ellie meets the alien?
Yeah, that I love that sequence. Yeah. It reminded me a lot of 2001. You know,
definitely.
That whole sequence of space travel. And
yeah.
I really, now that I know a little bit more about science, you know, because I got a little bit of that when I went to religion school too, quantum mechanics and all that and how that works. A lot of the things that were happening in the sci-fi realm of the movie make a lot more sense to me too. So it really increased my love for this film more, knowing all that sort of thing. And I would put this movie in that genre, like with 2001, of what I call hard sci-fi.
Definitely.
Not like a Star Wars or even Star Trek that's like science fantasy.
Yeah. William Shatner goes on Twitter all the time and complains that Star Wars is not science fiction, it's fantasy. And he has a point. Star Trek is, in a way, because it's as much about the adventure and the action and ships fighting in space, and some of it's about morality plays, but I don't know that I would call it science fiction just because it takes place in space.
Honestly, Star Trek is more about our problems today than it is about what's happening in the future. And this movie, because it takes place modern day, I think gives it that verisimilitude that and really makes you think about, okay, how should we react to something like this?
You also said the same thing about Stargate, correct?
Yes, I did. I that's what I liked about Stargate, is that it took place modern day. That's what appeals to me about it. So that's, right. That's my final judgment on Contact there. What's yours, Mike? I think I know already, but go ahead.
I am reminded of the scene from an early episode of South Park where Mr. Garrison says he hated Contact. He waited through the whole movie to see the alien, and it was her GD father. But I think it's a great film. It doesn't bother me at all that the alien was her father and that there's not an alien home world depicted. It's grounded, and that we didn't talk at all about the ending of it where she is in front of the subcommittee and no one believes her.
Yeah, and it comes down to a question of faith.
Yeah.
And you want us to believe you on faith that this happened. And then you see Matthew McConaughey's look because that's what he was all about the whole time. And I like how he sticks up for her. He's like, I believe her at the end. And then they get in the car.
And she ends up being a teacher. And
yeah, the large radio dish array there.
When we were in Puerto Rico, we wanted to see the VLA, but it was like on the other side of the island from where we were.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, Sean Bean had a really bad time there.
Was that Goldeneye?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
He does not fondly remember.
I'm sure he does when he checks his bank statement.
Yeah. Once again, we would direct you to the YouTube video, The Deaths of Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Sure, I'll die in your movie, mate.
Well, now we will turn our attention to a TV show which says that the deaths of Sean Bean were all the fault of the ancient aliens. I am talking, in fact, about ancient aliens. Let's go to our TV corner. All right, and we're back. Mike is laughing uncontrollably, but that's one of the things that they do on the show, Ancient Aliens. They
make you laugh uncontrollably.
Yeah, well, that too. And also, they tend to blame all of our problems on the ancient aliens. So,
but could it have had an extraterrestrial origin? These people who somehow got PhDs say it's possible. The only reason we're talking about this, the show Ancient Aliens in and of itself is not worthy of scholarly discussion. But since we keep making fun of it, and it keeps being relevant between Thor and Stargate and these other movies that have compared science and religion and science fiction and religion, it seems only fair. That said, I actually sat through two episodes. Believe it or not, I don't watch a lot of Ancient Aliens. I know that's going to be a surprise. It is not worthy of scholarly discussion at all, despite all the people they have on there who claim to be doctors.
Well, they do talk to some guys who have prestigious positions at well-known schools. Like, I think they talked to a guy from Princeton, a guy from Fuller. And, I mean, they're not saying, like, yeah, I believe in the aliens, but they're there to give, like, the background to the religious stories that they're looking at. But I guess, you know, they're going to get on TV and get paid for it. So, yeah, I'll be on your show.
Yeah.
I'll talk about God on your show. But the two main guys that they have on there is Giorgio A. Tsoukalos. It's basically his show. And he talks about all the extraterrestrials. I love the way he says it. And Eric von Däniken, who, if you remember the old movie from the 70s, Chariots of the Gods, he was like the godfather of the ancient aliens theories.
It's all his fault.
So, yeah, I remember, I think I bought that book at a garage sale.
I'm pretty sure my dad had a copy of Chariots of the Gods.
It had the pictures in the middle of like the Nazca lines and all the stuff.
My dad also watched a lot of In Search Of, too.
Oh, yes. Well, I watched that just because Leonard Nimoy
right.
did the voiceover. But, yeah, I watched more than a few episodes. I think I watched the whole first season, which is basically a series of two-hour specials. I stayed awake through most of it. And then select episodes of like the following two seasons because they were on Amazon Prime. There's a couple things that are very interesting. Like, there's this concept that aliens came down and helped the Jews get through the wilderness, you know, the 40 years they spent between Egypt and coming into Israel after, the, you know, they got the Ten Commandments and they're carrying them around. They say the aliens built this thing called the manna machine, you know, because the manna was the bread from heaven that came down.
Right.
We're not sure what manna is, but, you know, you'd collect it. You'd collect all that you needed for that day. If you tried to take any more, it would, you know, it would rot and you wouldn't be able to eat it.
And, of course, on Ancient Aliens, they say it was a replicator.
Yes, it was the kinds from Star Trek.
Yes, the Star Trek replicator, sorry.
Not the ones from Stargate. But, yeah, it was like this big machine, and they had this picture of it. And it was, I think they said it was nuclear powered, and it made this sort of seaweed kind of stuff, that this organic matter that you could eat. It was the manna machine. It's also this thing, they looked at things in the Bible, this description of the seat that they need to make for the celestial throne, and it was some kind of like sunken amphitheater that fit this spaceship model that came down. I don't know where they got this. It's from some verses in Ezekiel. And it described all these things that were like these spaceships that were, and the thing that Georgios Tsoukalos likes to say is misinterpreted, that the aliens were visiting all these people and they misinterpreted them as angels or gods or messengers, or they didn't know how to describe it, so they said it was something divine. They couldn't understand that people would come from another planet, and so yeah,
it's
misinterpreted. So we've done a good job of misinterpreting things for the past 5,000 years. So
what I couldn't get over was that the couple episodes I saw were almost exactly the same.
Yeah,
the narrator goes on, and every claim is couched. So they're not definitely saying it was aliens, because they don't know. They weren't there. And the one that I DVR'd from this season, the guy said, and I thought I still had the quote, but I don't, but he had a PhD, and he said, straight-faced right into the camera, the Book of Mormon had extraterrestrial origins. I'm not making that up.
Well, if you watch the episode about angels, all angels are extraterrestrials. They're the messengers. They're bringing us the messages from the mothership. So the Book of Mormon was delivered by an angel to John Smith. So, you know, it all makes sense. And that's like their other keyword. It's like, it all makes sense.
I don't know who writes this and how they've managed to go on. It's in its sixth or seventh season. It used to be on the History Channel, which is now just called History, but now it's on H2, which is like its sister channel. And all I know is how the states got their shapes, which was in actual...
It was actual history.
It's actual history is off the air after two seasons, but Ancient Aliens continues. It seems like it would run out of steam after five or six episodes. But no, they just keep getting people to stand in front of a camera and admit the possibility that aliens, you know, how could ancient people have possibly organized these in a geometric shape that goes this way and this and...
How do they make these monoliths stand so they perfectly align with the stars and the seasons? Like,
yeah.
I think people were smarter than they give them credit for. Like, I was just watching this Nova special about Easter Island, which, you know, Ancient Alien theorists say that, you know, it was the aliens that
built the Stoneheads and...
Yeah. But they figured it out. It was very simple. They attached some ropes and they just rocked it back and forth. The thing looked like it was walking, and that's what they did.
Yeah,
and they walked them all out. And by all the other evidence that they seen in the island of stones that have fallen over and stuff, that's how they got those things to where they were. It was simple, very simple engineering.
But yeah. Robert, isn't it possible that the tortoises on the Galapagos Islands might be extraterrestrial in origin? Or may even be extraterrestrials themselves. Some ancient astronaut theorists think it's possible. After all, these tortoises are hundreds of years old and were born before any person living here. Who's to say they were born on this planet? It's preposterous. I hope nobody out there watches it like a news program or...
Well, I have to give the guys credit. Like Georgios Tsoukalos, he talks about a lot of different ancient texts. And you could tell he's read them and studied them and he knows them.
And is
like
very...
the Bible... the Quran, the Bhagavad Gita.
And is comfortable perverting them for basic cable glory.
That's the thing. It's his interpretation. You could say, the thing that we like to say in our pluralistic society is, you're entitled to your opinion. But I'm entitled to ignore it as well. So that's the but that's always implied when people say that. So if you want to be all tolerant and stuff... We know what you're really thinking.
Kind of like how I tolerate ancient aliens' existence.
Yeah. So I can't say that the guy is a nut job anymore because he knows things that he's talking about. But I can't say that I agree with him. I'm going to put it that way.
I feel the same way about ancient aliens as I feel kind of about supernatural things from the Bible. Why isn't it still going on now? Why aren't there still alien visitors? Why did they stop coming after modern technology was invented?
Yeah.
It doesn't... There's no reason it wouldn't. There's no reason there wouldn't still be miracles being performed today. There's no reason there still wouldn't be aliens coming here today. They wouldn't just stop.
I could show you things where there have been miracles going on today, but... It all boils down to a matter of faith, whether you actually believe what they are or not. So I guess we'll just leave it to each his own. You can believe in science. You can believe in Christianity. You can believe in ancient aliens. So, but that's the one thing. They blame the aliens for all our problems and look to the aliens for all the solutions to our problems. There seems to be this sort of giving away of responsibility to, it's all their fault. We would be fine if it weren't for all them. We'd still be apes because they, this is Eric von Daniken saying, the aliens that came down, they had to sex with the people.
Oh, yes, I saw, like I saw every him say episode. That in an episode. They were mating with human women.
He says that in every episode. So it doesn't matter which one you watched.
I watched it, the one I watched was about demigods. And So where are the demigods today?
I don't know.
Could the creators of Ancient Aliens, the series, be extraterrestrials? Some people claim they may be.
It's all part of the plan, man.
All right. I think that's enough of that.
All right. So thank you for listening once again to Checking the Gate, a film and religion podcast. We hope you've enjoyed all of our insights into the aliens.
Yeah. I hope
the ancient, real ones and the fake ones.
I hope Ancient Aliens isn't anybody's favorite show.
It's the best comedy on TV today.
It's up there.
So for next time, we're going to take another gear shift.
Here. Yeah. Fact check. Hold on before we quit. Ancient Aliens is in its fifth season. I apologize.
So next time we're going to be doing Tyler Perry's I Can Do Bad All By Myself, looking at the way he incorporates Christian morality and Christian faith into filmmaking.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen this movie, so...
I have. It's pretty funny. I think you'll like it.
We'll find out how it is.
Okay, and in our TV corner...
The West Wing, a personal recommendation. I really enjoyed it when it was on, and I've been watching it again since it came to Netflix from the beginning, and... Robert's never seen it, and I thought he might enjoy it with its occasional references to religion, and it has the president be a Catholic, and some of his advisors are Jewish, and every now and then there are discussions of their respective faiths. So I told Robert to just Google The West Wing and religion, and some episode titles will pop up. So if you feel like catching up, that's how we're going to do it. And watch those episodes and tune in.
Yeah, so it's CGG Podcast Recommends.
Yes.
I recommend something to you and you to me. So, and from us to you. If you want to find out more, you can go to our website at www.ctgpodcast.com. You can also search us on Facebook and Twitter at CTG Podcast. Mike, follow him on Twitter.
At Michael M. Patty, MichaelMPatti.
And you could email us with your questions or complaints at ctgpodcast@yahoo.com. So until next time, this is Robert saying keep the faith.
And Mike saying peace out.